For a lot of folks, this story is just kind of an abstract parable that Jesus tells, but for me, it brings back some very, very specific memories. As I mentioned before, I grew up on an old rocky hillside in Montgomery County. We moved there when I was 9 years old, and one of my jobs was to help pick up the rocks on that rocky hillside. Whenever my dad thought I had been idle for a little too long, now, he enjoyed my reading books, but if I read books for way too long, he'd send me out to get some exercise, fresh air, picking up rocks. If I got into trouble, very frequently, my punishment was to be sent out to pick up rocks. The thing about that hillside, however, was that you could go out there and you could pick out a spot and you could pick up the rocks in that particular area, put them in a bucket, carry them over, throw them on the rock pile, and by the time you got back, they had proliferated. There were twice as many as before you started, or at least it seemed that way to me. It felt like a field of never-ending rocks. But we were able to clear a good part of it, and so, as I described to the children, we would lay off rows, and we would have beans and corns and corn and squash and tomatoes, and I had a row of peanuts that my dad let me plant on one side of it. And then we planted a cover crop during the winter. And for the cover crop, of course, we would just broadcast the seed so it would cover the entire garden, the entire field. So when I hear this story, it brings back very, very specific memories and actions. Now, in our day and time, that's not true for most people. But when Jesus was first telling this story, even if the people hearing it were fishermen, were carpenters, whatever they did, they would have had experience of seeing farmers casting seed. Because as they walked from place to place, they would have been passing by farms and watching as the farmer cast the seed, and perhaps they saw some of it fall on the path. Perhaps they stepped on it as they walked along the way. They would have been very aware of these images, and they would have been very real for them. So, why this particular story? It appears in three of the Gospels, and it's the only story that has an explanation connected to it, an interpretation connected to it. Usually when Jesus tells a story, he ends it the way he ends the first part of this. You who have ears to hear, let's hear. In this story, it seems like Jesus is addressing a particular issue that was very important to the early communities of faith. Now, there are some scholars who will tell you that perhaps those gospel writers created this story and put it in Jesus' mouth in order to address those issues. There are others who will say that there was a vast oral tradition out there concerning Jesus, lots more stories than we have, and that each gospel writer chose those stories that seemed to apply to their life at that time. Now, I tend to subscribe to that idea about how the Gospels came together and which stories were saved. So clearly, there was an issue that was being addressed in the early church as well as Jesus talking about sowing seed. He's not just talking about agriculture here. In the early church, there were some people who, when the disciples went out to try to preach the gospel of God's love, couldn't hear it for whatever reason. And there were those who were attracted to the community, but when things got tough, they left. There were those who came and became established, but the cares of the world were too great and pulled them away. And then there are those who came and planted themselves and were rooted in that place and in that gospel. Well, we face the same thing today. It's remarkable how similar this is to experience in the life of the church today, because there are folks who simply cannot hear the good news of God's love. Sometimes it's because we don't present it well. Sometimes it's because they've been hurt by churches in the past and felt rejected for whatever reason, there are going to be folks who just won't hear the gospel of God's love, no matter how well we feel like we've presented it. Then there are those folks who get really excited. And every church has had experience of this. They get really, really excited. They come and they get involved and they come to everything and they join every group. And after about 2 weeks, you don't see them again. Or a month, they're gone. Then there are those folks who come and because of the demands of work, and you know as well as I that modern technology has done away with the 40-hour work week. You're on call 24/7. We all are, if you have a cell phone anyway. And the demand for time and the demand for attention, any time you spend on church, any time you spend on the gospel, is time taken away from that work. And as we all know, time is money. And sometimes there are folks who come, and because of Jesus' insistence on everybody being provided with enough, that challenges those of us who have great resources to share those resources. That challenges the income disparity that we experience, that they experienced in those days. It becomes too difficult to square their understanding of the world that they live out there and the understanding of the gospel that they're trying to live in here, and they leave. And then there are those who take root. That's you. Right? You wouldn't be here if you weren't. You are the ones who are here, and you are attempting your best to show that love of God to others. Our mission statement here is that we are here to share the loving light of Christ, connecting people to God and to each other so that in those relationships they can be transformed. That's what we believe we're called to do. And everything that we do here, everything that exists for us, is supposed to help us do that. Now, as I said before, Jesus gives an interpretation of this parable. He tells the parable to a larger crowd, but then he takes his disciples aside. If you've read much in the Gospels, you know that the disciples are a little thick when it comes to hearing what Jesus had to say. And so at least in this instance, he felt like he needed to spell it out so they wouldn't just think he was talking about farming, which with this group was a great danger. Okay? It's a danger probably for any of us, to be truthful. But as I've looked at this story across the years, as I've studied it, it's probably one you have known since childhood if you grew up in the church. I recognize very quickly that we're the seeds, okay? Those of us who can and those of us who can't hear are the seeds in that story. And we are to be planted and we are to grow. And our one job description is to bear fruit. Did you ever think about that? The one thing that we are called to do is to bear the fruit of God's love in the world, in our lives, that loving light of Christ, the love for God and for neighbor that Jesus specifies as being the most important of the commandments. Of all the things we do, they are supposed to be preparing us for that one thing, to bear fruit. For several years, Margaret and I planted tomato plants. Actually, Margaret did the planting. She's the gardener. I should tell the truth, shouldn't I? And they would be eaten by the rabbits, I imagine, and we were feeding the live the animals that lived around our house until Lizzie brought her cat home to live with us for a while. And for the first year in years, we actually have tomatoes because the rabbits are scared to come in the yard. A tomato plant that doesn't produce tomatoes is worthless. A Christian who doesn't produce the fruit of God's love, do I need to say it? We're worthless. That's our one job. The one job of a tomato plant is to produce tomatoes. The one job of a Christian is to bear the fruit of God's love in the world for all people. That is our job. But as I've read this story, I've come to a different understanding, one I never saw until I approached it actually this time. And that is, if we individually are the seeds, then we as a community are the field. Our job as a community of faith is to be a fertile field, so that when you seeds come and get planted, you will get the nourishment you need to go and spread the loving light of Christ wherever you go. So this building is a beautiful building, one of the most beautiful I've ever stood in. And we're getting ready to have a capital campaign, you'll hear more about that in the future, to help make sure we take care of this building. But unless this building is the fertile ground where we learn the love of God in Jesus Christ so that we can take it into the world, it's worthless. Its sole purpose for being here is to help prepare us to bear fruit in the world. As you go out this door, you'll have tables and all kinds of opportunities to work on the Habitat House, to do Bible study. At other times, you might be enlisted to be a Sunday school teacher. You might share your gifts as a choir member. You might go on a mission trip. We think of those as programs. But they're not just programs. They are ways of cultivating these seeds so that we can bear fruit in the world. Unless these programs help us to bear the fruit of God's love in the world, they're worthless. We don't need to be doing them. You see, we are God's field. We can't take responsibility for those seeds that may fall here and for whatever reason they can't stay. All we can do is make everyone feel as welcome as we possibly can. To know that they are a beloved child of God. And that this could very well be the fertile field where they can grow and bear fruit for the kingdom of God. Now, it may not be. I mean, we are not everybody's cup of tea, and that's okay. I have always, through these 40 years, encouraged people to find that congregation where they can live out their faith most fully, where they can bear fruit. If it's here, that's great. If it's not, then find the place where you can. Because that's the important thing. The important thing is not that we get more members at West End. The important thing is that those who come here find a fertile field so they can grow and bear fruit of God's love. You have come. You're a part of that. You are the fertile field. And individually, the seeds planted in that fertile field. And now I call you to do the one thing that we are called and empowered to do. Go forth, bear the fruit of God's love. With God's help, I believe we can. Thanks be to God.